This morning we will end our series, Who is Jesus? And so for the past 4 weeks, we've been talking about the many aspects of who Jesus is. We started with who is Jesus? Jesus is life. And then we moved on to Jesus is called, and Jesus is the one who calls. And today we will visit the concept that Jesus is also the one who sends. We will be reading out of Matthew's Gospel, two different texts. We will start in Matthew chapter 10 with just a few of those verses, verses 5 through 7. In this text, Jesus has already named and called the 12 disciples, and so now is his sending of those disciples. So listen now to what he has to say to them. These 12 disciples Jesus sent out with the following instructions. Go nowhere among the Gentiles and enter no town of the Samaritans, but go rather to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. As you go, proclaim the good news. The kingdom of heaven has come near. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Amen. Have you met him? Have you heard about him? Have you met that one they call Jesus? You know, the one they say comes from Galilee. So many Gentiles in Galilee. It must be a very unclean place. That's why I think our priests have told us not to listen to the things that that guy Jesus has to say. I mean, have you heard the things that he's talking about and teaching? He tells us that we are to love our enemies and to pray for those who mean to do us harm. It's ridiculous. Why would we do that? And then he said that we're supposed to love people the way we want to be loved. We're supposed to treat people the way we want to be treated. But he can't mean everybody, can he? He can't mean to treat the leper or the centurion the way we want to be treated. And then he said that we don't need to pray with a lot of words, that we should just simply say the things that we want to say because God knows. God knows our hearts. But only the priests can pray, right? I mean, who am I that I would go to God? I mean, after all, I'm only a woman of low regard, and I haven't even bore any sons yet. God would never listen to me. And have you seen the crowds that follow him? Those dirty, poor, lame, and sick people that follow him all around wherever he goes. And those 12 men that follow him around like sheep without a shepherd. Those tax collectors and fishermen and zealots. I mean, what do those people know about God anyway? Why would we have to listen to them? I know they're Jews, but those aren't Jews that I would want to listen to. And I'm sure that our priests would have something to say about that as well. But you know, I have heard some other things too about this Jesus. I've heard from a friend of mine that her son, who for years couldn't say a word, who was mute, actually started to speak after Jesus had a visit with him. But I'm just sure that that's because the boy finally decided it was time to talk. Surely Jesus had nothing to do with that. But then I also heard the other day that a lame man actually got up from his place and took up his mat and walked away. And I've heard that demon-possessed children are set free from the bondage of the demons that had possessed them for so long. I've heard that the blind see. And oh my gosh, the biggest story of all, we've just heard that a little dead girl was raised up and Jesus was there. And after she was raised up, Jesus said to her parents, "Go and give her some lunch." Is it possible? Is it possible that God has sent us a prophet? And those 12, I understand now that he's willing to share his power with them. Well, maybe. Maybe finally someone has come for the Jew. Maybe finally somebody, God, has sent someone who is willing to do something about our situation and take care of God's chosen people. Could it be possible that God has sent those 12 to share in the power that this man Jesus has so that our diseases might be cured, that they may actually have the power to heal us and to set us free from the things that have kept us in bondage? Is it possible that there is a day for the Jew and not for the Gentile? It would be a new day for the people of God. It would be a new day for the people of God. And that's what the text says. The text says that Jesus came for the lost sheep of the house of Israel, God's chosen people, people that were chosen long before Jesus ever came to earth. God called these people with no political or military power out of a land that they were familiar with, to a land that he would show them. A land flowing with milk and honey. A land of his choosing that he would simply give to them. That they wouldn't have to fight for, that they wouldn't have to strive for. He would be their God and they would be his people. It says that in Genesis. However, in that covenant made with those people, particularly with Abraham, God also says to Abraham that through this covenant, all the people on the earth would be blessed through him. My understanding of all, especially when God says it, means just that. All. All the people on the earth would be blessed through Abraham. The prophets that came after Abraham affirmed those words over and over again. It would be a new day for the people of God. And so as we read through the Gospel of Matthew and we get to the very end of that gospel, Jesus, who came for the lost sheep of the house of Israel, the covenant comes full circle. Jesus, the resurrected Christ, gathers the disciples together one last time. And in chapter 28, starting in the 18th verse, he says this: "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Go, therefore, and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything that I have commanded you. And remember, I am with you always to the end of the age." It was a new day for God's people. And there those 11 gathered together, and there was the resurrected Christ. These were the ones that he had sent out. These were the ones who ran away. and here they are face to face with the risen Christ. And they could have heard anything they wanted in those minutes. Jesus could have said anything he wanted in those minutes when he faces them. In his hour of greatest need, they all abandoned him. He could have condemned them. He could have called them cowards and liars, both worse. And he has the authority to do it. Here is the one who spoke with authority, taught with authority, healed with authority. He could have said and done anything he wanted to them. But instead of condemnation, he sends them on a mission trip. Think about it. In our human capacity, who would have done that? I am sure what they expected was to be cast out and set aside. And instead, Jesus embraces them and says to them, go. Go and teach and preach and baptize and make disciples. I think what he was trying to say to them in those minutes is, hey guys, it's not over. I know what you did. You know what you did. But I'm here to tell you that you now have work to do. You are the ones who are going to go out in my name, in my authority, and teach and preach and make disciples and do all the things that I've ever done, because I'm giving it all to you. And while it would be really easy for us to believe that that message was only for those 11 and maybe some of the followers who were there to witness all of that, that message is our message today. You see, what Jesus was trying to tell them, and I think what Jesus was trying to tell us, is don't worry about the things you've done. They might not have been things you're very proud of, but I forgive you. They might be things that you're carrying with you, but I've covered those things in the cross. And so now what I'm telling you to do is to go. Go. And make disciples. Now I'm thinking those disciples have considered those words, and they're probably thinking, well, you know, Rome is really not very kind to us. And we've already done some of the stuff you told us to do. I mean, we've healed the sick, we've fed some people, we've taken care of your business, and now we're just going to go back to the way life used to be before you. Because it was comfortable and it was easy and we knew what to expect. And I think that's the way many of us think about the call that Jesus has given to each one of us. Right? It's very easy to say things like, we've built 13 houses. Just look at the Douglas community. It's so much better off since we've been there. Or maybe we think, well, I've made those cookies for Kairos Prison Ministry, and I don't need to do that anymore. Or I've already greeted at the door a number of times, and I've seen all the new people I need to see, so it's somebody else's turn to do that. I'm just going to show up in church on Sunday morning, or maybe I'll watch live stream because, you know, I just don't feel like getting dressed today, which isn't a bad thing. I mean, I love live stream. But Jesus is saying, no, I'm sending you to do the work that I started 2,000 years ago. And it's not over just because you've done it one time. It's not over just because there's 13 houses. It's not over because there's thousands of cookies for the prison. It's not over because you've brought in food for the food pantry. go and make disciples. It's not a one-time offer. It's a lifetime of sending over and over and over again. It's not something that we congratulate ourselves for, where we live in the past and we think, gosh, we did such a good job on that mission trip. Hey, I've been to all parts of the world on mission. I'm done. I'm good. And then we never do anything else. Or perhaps we just get stuck in our present and we think, well, you know, like I'm looking at where we are and I'm looking somewhere down the road and the future doesn't look really bright to me. And so I think I'm just going to stay right where I am today. I went to a workshop where a pastor actually said, and I will never forget this, he was standing in the pulpit and he said that he could determine when his church was going to close by the demographic sitting in the pews. Wow. Well, let's make some future plans around that. As if God is done working with people. Or perhaps we just don't want to upset the apple cart. Because, church, it is so easy to go along to get along than it is to challenge the status quo. It's just really easy to say, well, if nobody else is talking about that, and if nobody else is taking care of those people, those sick people, those hurting people, those people from south of the border, the people that are LGBTQ, those people who have HIV, those children who are living in conditions we wouldn't let our dogs live in. Well, if nobody else is taking care of them, then maybe we shouldn't take care of them either, because we don't want to upset anybody. I'm thinking Jesus is not in that business. And I'm thinking that Jesus, when he sends us, doesn't always send us into the most comfortable circumstances of our lives. So right now, some of you are also thinking, that's great. That's great for people who are trained to do that kind of work. Cookie bakers and, you know, special people that know how to use computers really well or read Bible studies and have great discernment. Maybe it's really only for professionals like seminary-trained people. Only they are the ones that Jesus is really talking to because they're equipped to do that kind of work. Or maybe we're thinking Mother Teresa. Mother Teresa, she had a straight line to God. God talked right to Mother Teresa, Archbishop Desmond Tutu. Maybe a few others that you can name, right? These were people that God spoke to. Maybe the new news for us is that God speaks to all of us. We're just not always good at listening. I mean, I remember when I used to think that, and I remember saying very clearly, and you can ask the people who knew me best, I will never be a pastor. You have got the wrong person, God. Actually, God, you are talking to the person sitting next to me in the pew because it is not me you are talking to. God talks to all of us all the time. You don't need to be Mother Teresa to hear the voice of God. So what does that mean for all of us who are being sent by Jesus to make disciples of Jesus Christ? I was reading recently an article from the Bishop Will Willimon. He was a bishop in the United Methodist Church, but before he was a bishop, Will Willimon was the dean at Duke Divinity School, and he was a district superintendent, and he was also a pastor in a very small rural church. Great guy. There's lots of things about Willimon that are out there. Willimon never has a thought he has not written down. He probably has 100 books published. If you want to read some of his stuff, and he's a great writer, our library has those books if you're interested. But there's a story that he tells about a boy named Jeremy, a 12-year-old boy. He was a bishop in the Carolinas, and Willimon was invited to a church, a local rural church, think 30 people. That was the size of the church, 30 people, to baptize this boy, this 12-year-old boy. And so he agrees. He gets there to find out that this is a baptism by immersion. Willimon immediately got very uncomfortable. I'm still trying to figure out in the story how Willimon got all the way to be a bishop and had never done an immersion baptism, because that's why he was most uncomfortable. As a matter of fact, this is how I was sure that he hadn't done an immersion baptism. Jeremy asked him if he should leave his socks on, and Willimon told him yes. What a mess that must have been. But Willimon goes ahead after talking to Jeremy and the pastor of that church, and they go ahead and they're getting ready to do the baptism. And Willimon says to 12-year-old Jeremy, "Jeremy, would you like to say anything to the congregation before we baptize you?" This is a 12-year-old boy with a captured audience. Of course he's going to say something to the congregation. And so he starts this way. "I just want to say thank you. I'm here today to be baptized because of you." And then he says this: "A few years ago, when I first started coming here, my parents had just got divorced, and my whole world came apart. And you people loved me and cared for me. You included me. You told me the stories of Jesus. And I'm here today because of you. And I'm going to do my best to make you proud and to live the life that Jesus wants me to live." Willimon said he could feel his heart pounding in his chest. And so they entered the baptismal font. He leaned little Jeremy over and he picked him up out of the water. And Jeremy had a smile so big across his face, Willimon said he thought the boy's face was going to break. And when Willimon looked at the congregation and everybody sitting out there, he said everybody in the congregation had the same smile on their face, and there was not a dry eye, including his, in the house. My belief about that is that there were only two seminary-trained people in the congregation that day: Bishop Willimon and the pastor. Go and make disciples of Jesus Christ. Those 30 people loved that boy in his brokenness. They loved him the way he was. They told him the stories of Jesus. He belonged. He belonged there. And he knew who he was because somebody told him who he was. That his parents didn't define him. That what defined him was his relationship with Jesus Christ. And he came to the altar that day and he was baptized. Jesus sends all of us to go and make disciples. Love the way Jesus loves. Give the way Jesus gives. Live for the sake of another who needs a little bit of good news. And I know, because I've said things like this before, but do you know how broken I am? How can I help somebody and tell them the stories of Jesus if I am so broken on the inside that I don't even know where to begin? Those 12 disciples that Jesus called, I'm thinking they were pretty broken people, because they were just people like you and like me. I am broken. I'm a broken person. And the truth is we are all broken people. And we all need Jesus to heal our broken hearts. So being broken has its own baggage with it. We all know that. But that doesn't mean that Jesus can't use us to be a disciple and to make disciples. just this past week, and this is, you know, let's call it a God thing or circumstance. I got a friend from a colleague of mine in another conference, and he called me to talk about this general conference that's going on right now. But I hadn't talked to him in a long time, so you know how those conversations go. You start one place, but you end up someplace totally different. And he said to me, he told me a story about a woman that had been coming to their church for quite a long time. And it started this way. There's this homeless woman who's been coming to our church since before I got here. He said, and every week she comes to church and she sits in the pews and she participates in worship and then she goes. Nobody really knows a lot about her, but they're very friendly to her. They're good disciples to this homeless woman. One day, he said, as they were sitting there, it was baptism Sunday. Once a quarter in his church, they baptize adults who have taken some kind of catechism, initiation into the Christian life. And so all the adults come forward, and the choir sings Wade in the Water. And you all know the song, Wade in the Water. So they're singing Wade in the Water. The homeless woman who's sitting in the pew gets up and walks into the choir loft, because guess what? She's going to sing Wade in the Water with the choir that Sunday. He said, everybody in the choir is really not sure what to make of that. Everybody's very disturbed. And he said, the only voice you could hear from the choir loft was that woman's voice. Very loud, Wade in the Water. After the baptisms were over, one of the people that was baptized walked up into the choir loft. This was quite a morning for the choir, I must say. Walks up into the choir loft, hugs the homeless woman and says, thank you so much for celebrating my special day with me. You are a child of God and you are my sister. And then she went back to her pew and sat down. The homeless woman stayed in the choir, but this woman went back to her pew and sat down. Every Sunday after that, this woman came to church and introduced herself. I am a child of God and I am your sister. I am a child of God and I am your sister. She stopped using her name altogether. I am a child of God and I am your sister. Her life was changed by that one person. But see, that's not the end of the story. A few weeks go by, he says he gets a phone call from the hospital. This woman was homeless. She was attacked on the street the night before. She wants her pastor. So he goes. You're going to hear a confession from a pastor, which is really incredible to me that I'm even saying this out loud. He's walking down the hallway at the hospital, and he can see her, like walking back and forth in front of the door, and she's mumbling. And he's thinking, as he's walking closer and closer to the door, she hasn't seen me. I can just turn around and go back to my car and go back to the church. Every pastor has thought that from time to time. I just really don't want to go make this hospital visit today. He gets in the room. As he's walking toward the room, he starts to hear her. I am a child of God. I am a child of God. I am a child of God. Panicked, but just mantra over and over again. I am a child of God. He walks in the room. Mid-sentence, she turns around and looks at him, and she puts her hands on his shoulders, and she says, I am a child of God, and I am your sister. He said he mumbled some things that he can't even remember after that, and he said to her, I am your brother. And they stood there in the room with her hands on his shoulders. And he was weeping on the phone at this point, and he said to me, my life has never been the same since then. You don't need special training to speak a word of hope into someone's life. To a pastor who has forgotten the call, to a broken-hearted child, to the person sitting across the dinner table from you. You just need to love them the way Jesus loved them, to take seriously the command to go. So go. Go on a Vault mission trip. Give sight to somebody who needs to see better. go teach a Sunday school class or a Bible study. And it doesn't have to be to children. Everybody needs to hear the good news. Go serve in a food pantry and make sure that our most vulnerable have food to eat. Go and sing in the choir and make a joyful noise. Go visit someone who's alone in a nursing home today. Go. Go serve communion. Chances are likely you'll meet Jesus there. Go on a mission trip. Ask for forgiveness. Offer forgiveness. Go. Jesus sends us all and tells us to go. So our mission, if we choose to accept it, is to go and make disciples of Jesus Christ without any special training. Because the truth is that if it's Jesus who sends us, then it's Jesus who goes with us. We are not alone. We are not alone. Thanks be to God. Amen.